Welcome to Viewpoints Around the World and Look Ahead Radio. My name is Tom Arms, and I've been off for the past month. I've been in Colombia talking about the post-FARC world. I mean, what are the chances of the peace deal being successfully implemented? And how about the drug trade and the impact of Venezuelan refugees on Colombian society? All these issues will be addressed in this week's podcast, along with things like the intrusion of Henry VIII into the modern British political scene and the impact of Hurricane Irma and climate change. Please listen. Please enjoy. Thank you very much indeed.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World. It's been 4 weeks, I think, since we last heard from our foreign editor and European editor, foreign editor, whichever, Tom Arms. And he joins us live this evening here on the program. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has been up to. As always, the numbers, if you'd like to join us, 252 area code 247-7282. 910 area code 353-4674. And of course, that toll-free number 800-818-2255 via email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com, via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. And just quickly to remind you about our sponsors for the afternoon, Floyd's 1921 Restaurant, located at 4 Thinbridge Street, beautiful uptown Morehead City, and of course, Advanced Water Systems, the people that bring you Connecticut, folks that are practically reinventing water. And as we prepare to talk to Tom, we're going to be chatting with him about the experiences associated with hurricanes, as well as his travels. So with that, let's start with Tom. Good evening to you. As a matter of fact, almost midnight where you are as we speak. I assume you're back in London. And how do you find the city, both in physical condition and the weather?
Yeah, it hasn't changed that much. I must ask you, did you miss me, Lockwood?
I'm sorry, was there a question there?
Did you miss me?
No. Well, No, it's sort of like a headache. When it goes away, you go, there's something missing here, but we're not sure what it is. Yes, we missed you. That would be great. It's great to hear your voice again.
Well, it's great to be back on air.
I bet. Tell us, where have you been?
I have been in Colombia. I have been tramping through the jungle in the Amazon region. I have been climbing up cliff faces. I have been talking to the defense minister in the presidential palace, various diplomats. I've been speaking to refugees. I've been in Cartagena and Bogota, a little town called Puerto Nariño. I've been having fun.
Sounds like it. And did you learn anything that surprised you?
I learned a lot. Not a great deal, but surprised me.
Okay.
I learned that Colombia is progressing in the post-FARC world, but it still has an awful lot of problems. The peace deal that they negotiated back in September of last year and was rejected by the plebiscite and then approved by Congress, it's still dividing the country. And next year they're going to have presidential elections, and it's going to be a big issue in the presidential election.
Now, the FARC, that is the organization that was the anti-government, they were the revolutionaries, but also had a strong, and please correct me if I'm wrong, a strong relationship with drug running. They were supposed to give up their weaponry. Did they, in fact, do so?
Oh, yes. Yes, they are. And they've now become a political party.
Okay.
And they're going to be given 10 seats in Congress, which they'll be allowed to hold on to for 10 years, regardless of how they do in elections. And after that, they have to earn them by winning votes. So FARC has definitely come out of the bushes, out of the jungle, and they have become political. There's still another guerrilla organization called the ELN, which is the National Liberation Army, but that's about the quarter the size of FARC. And with FARC out of the picture, the government is going to be spending something like $30 billion in reintegrating them into the into Colombian society, but also building roads and railways and all sorts of things which they were prevented from doing because of the fighting against FARC.
Right. Now, real quickly, and move on to a few other things. And I've got an interesting text from a listener. But the issue of drugs and drug running, what does this do? Of course, this is a big issue here in the United States, and I would assume around the world. What is the potential impact of this peace treaty, if you will, between the two warring factions in Colombia, three, now that you added that third smaller group? What impact might this have?
Yes, of course. Well, ironically, in fact, the amount of drugs coming out of Colombia has increased because of the peace deal.
Wow.
But it looks like it's going to be a temporary jump. Now, the reason for that is that FARC's political base was the peasants,
right,
who made a lot of money out of
opium,
planting coca, which is turned into cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And while negotiations were taking place, they decided to try and solidify that base by telling their peasant supporters, plant more coca.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they told them to plant more coca was because they knew that the government was going to offer them big subsidies to stop planting coca.
So, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so they get a windfall.
Right.
So, in fact, the amount of land under coca has increased by about a third in the past year. But FARC is now committed to helping to stamp out the drug trade. And so now they're going to be telling their peasant farmers to stop planting coca.
All right.
So it's going to take a little while for this to work its way through the system.
Okay.
Next few years, you're probably going to be seeing more cocaine coming out of Colombia.
Mm.
But then it's going to start to drop off dramatically.
We hope. Now, two very quick questions. I've got a note here from one of our listeners. Will Colombia be accepting Venezuelan refugees?
Yes. They are accepting. So far, an estimated 300,000 have crossed the border, and they are expecting to have up to 1 million.
Wow.
Now, a lot of these people are dual nationals, because while the fighting was going on against FARC, 5 million people were displaced, and a lot of them went across the border to Venezuela, which at the time was much more stable.
Right.
And earning a lot of money.
Okay.
But now, of course, the position is reversed, and so they're coming back to Colombia.
All right. And very quick question, because we've got to move on to a lot of things here, Tom. What about the influence, the impact of the Venezuelan, conundrum, I'll use that. I think it's really a rebellion that has been pretty much staunched by the current government there. But what impact will this have on Colombia? Any at all? And just a very quick answer to
that.
Oh, yes. Okay. Is it negative or positive? Negative or positive?
Negative.
Okay.
It will have a negative impact because all these people that are crossing the border, they're putting a strain on educational facilities, health facilities, things like that.
All right. We're going to get back to our guest, Tom Arms, with LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. So many things to talk to him about. We're going to try to move this along as quickly as we can. And we're going to find out next what has been the coverage of the events in the United States, particularly related to the hurricanes. But also, I'm curious, are they paying attention to the issue of monuments, where we are now discovering that, well, even Christopher Columbus needs to be removed? Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 18th of September. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. It is the UN General Assembly next week. The first speeches start on Tuesday, but Donald Trump has summoned leaders to a summit on Monday to discuss UN reform, which means cuts. The president seeks support to reduce spending on peacekeeping forces. The International Atomic Energy Agency, UNICEF, the World Food Program, climate change, and withdrawal from the Human Rights Council. Trump will address the full assembly on Tuesday. Also talking on the first day will be Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister, fresh from 10-day tour of Latin America, before he and his wife Sarah return to Jerusalem to face charges of bribery and fraud. British Prime Minister Theresa May will set out her version of Britain's post-Brexit global role when she addresses the General Assembly on Wednesday. That position will be attacked by the opposition Labour Party's annual conference starting on Sunday. Other speakers to watch next week at the UN will be Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, French President Emmanuel Macron, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Turkish President Erdogan, and Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. Germans trooped to the polls on Sunday. Angela Merkel is expected to easily win a fourth term in office as Chancellor. Her most likely coalition partners are the Green Party and the centrist FDP. The anti-EU, anti-Islam Alternative for Deutschland is expected to win representation at federal level for the first time. There are also elections in New Zealand on Saturday. Prime Minister Bill English is seeking a fresh term after only 8 months in office. French President Macron on Friday is expected to issue a labor reform directive which will make it easier to hire and fire French workers. French left-winger Jean-Luc Mélenchon has called for demonstrations to oppose the decree. President Trump's proposed reform to American business taxes will be discussed by the Senate Finance Committee on Tuesday. The president wants to slash business taxes from 39.6%, one of the highest in the world, to 15%, one of the lowest. In Paris, the International Atomic Energy Agency holds its annual general conference on Monday. This year, it will focus firmly on North Korea. In early September, the IAEA boss warned that North Korea has gone from regional menace to global threat. Moldova on Sunday holds a referendum on President Igor Dodon's proposals to drop plans to recover $1 billion defrauded from Moldovan banks. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. Joining us in just a moment, I want to remind you we're going to be chatting about Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Harvey and what the coverage has been there in Europe. Tom joins us from London. He has just returned from 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks, in Colombia. We just got a report on that. Tom, let's talk about the events here in the United States. First and foremost on my mind is the coverage on the hurricanes Harvey and Irma. How interested has the European media been in this, and how interested is Europe in general about these events?
Extremely interested.
Really?
I mean, it's on the front page. It's lead item in the news every single day, and it has been for weeks. Now, just why? Well, for a start, there are 500,000 Britons living in Florida.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You know, these are either living in or on holiday in Florida at Disney World or
right.
in Miami. Another reason is because of flooding in Houston, one of the pipelines was closed down
mm-hmm.
and the gasoline prices here in Europe started to go up. So, yes, we're very interested. Another reason, of course, is that a lot of the Caribbean islands that were hit were British colonies, or what they now call overseas territories.
Okay.
Antigua, Barbuda, British Virgin Islands, Bahamas.
And
those are all British properties.
And of
they're
course,
responsible for them.
And of course, they were devastated, particularly those islands you're talking about. And of course, the UN has stepped in, as have countries from the Netherlands and Great Britain, to provide assistance to those areas that have been devastated by these hurricanes. The other story, of course, has been one and may not have seen a lot of coverage, that being the monuments. And I'm not sure if that's something we have not chatted about. So I'm just curious, casually, there's been a lot of talk about monuments in the United States and, of course, directly related to the Confederacy. However, interestingly enough, apparently a peace monument in Atlanta was considered to be, well, something of concern. It was demolished. And now, of course, there's talk of removing Christopher Columbus monument in New York City and other cities. Has this been covered by any chance in the European press by over the past couple of months?
Yes, it has not gotten as much coverage as Irma.
Right.
Which is dominating the news pages, but it has been covered. This issue is not restricted to the U.S. I don't know if you ever heard of a gentleman called Cecil Rhodes, but mm-hmm. he was
yes.
the premier imperialist, British imperialist in the 19th century, and set up the Rhodes Scholarship at Oxford.
Right.
And there's a statue of him at Oxford, and various students have demanded that his statue be taken down and Rhodes Scholarships be stopped.
Amazing.
So it's not something which is restricted to the U.S.
Okay. Is this part of a a movement in the U.K. and maybe in France and Germany? I mean, is this sort of a cause célèbre?
I don't see much of this elsewhere in Europe.
Interesting.
It seems to be restricted to the Anglo-Saxon world, which, in my opinion, is going completely nuts at the moment. it's political correctness gone mad.
We find you and I are on the same page. Tom Arms of Look Ahead News.
It's the first time for everything.
There is. Look Ahead, you need to go to Columbia more often. LookAheadNews.com and, of course, Look Ahead Radio. Tom, let's talk about some of the other aspects. And just quickly, related to, I mentioned Irma, and you've got a note here, the Pope. We've got the issue of climate change. We, of course, do not see those connections because we have been experiencing major hurricanes for eons. But we'll touch on that briefly. Real quickly, the weather there in London, just out of curiosity, just to sort of segue into this.
It's autumn.
Okay. And is that a pretty time of year in London in the
No, we don't get the we don't get the leaves
foliage.
Changing
okay.
colour quite as you do.
All right.
It just gets a bit wetter and a bit windier.
Okay. Let's talk here very quickly. Pope, climate change, and of course saw some interesting stories here recently, concerns related to demonizing anybody who would be, quote, a denier. The Pope has come out on the issue of climate change, and of course the Pope has, well, himself been, pretty critical of a lot of not only climate but other issues around the world. What is the influence of his observations?
Well, I think he has a great deal of influence. You know, he's a religious leader. You know, and the Vatican is a secular as well as religious country.
Right.
By the way, my son, who was held up for 2 days coming back from Colombia because of Hurricane Irma, says that anyone who is opposed to climate change is, and I quote, and this comes from my son, Christopher, an idiot.
Well, and you know, we've known for a long time that the climate changes. As a matter of fact, we here in the States have it called fall, winter, spring, and summer. But that's beside the point. Let's go on to the issue of other concerns. Events that have been taking place there in the United Kingdom, and you have been away for some time, and we talked about this just before you left. August has been is a holiday season for Europe, for most of Europe, and of course we had, while you were on your holiday, a terrorist attack in Spain, and I'm just curious, what impact has all of this had on tourism, particularly in the European theater?
Well, in fact, in the UK, we've had record numbers of tourists.
Okay.
This could be because of the fact the pound is dropping through the floor, has been dropping through the floor since Brexit, and people are taking advantage of it. But the tourism does not seem to have had a big impact on tourist numbers.
Very interesting. All right. And then since we brought up Brexit, what's the status of Brexit? You have a note here. Brexit and Henry VIII.
This has been a really interesting week because the government has taken advantage of something called the Henry VIII Clause. Hmm. Now, King Henry VIII, you may recall, broke with Rome in the 16th century. And in 1539, in order to facilitate that break, he introduced basically legislation which said that he could transfer all of the Catholic properties and everything else over to the crown and transfer all of the responsibilities of the Roman Catholic Church in Britain in one fell swoop. And then if anything needed to be changed at a later stage, it didn't require the approval of Parliament. He could do it by decree. And that's called the Henry VIII Clause. And it hasn't been used since 1539. But now we're in a situation where we have thousands of pieces of EU legislation. And if each one of them has to be scrutinized by Parliament, it will take decades for Brexit to take effect. And so the government has dug out of the archives the Henry VIII Clause and said, we're going to do it. We're just going to repeal all of the EU legislation and move it over into British legislation. And if any of the changes to workers' rights laws, environmental laws, or anything like that have to be done, Parliament is not going to be involved. It's all going to be done by the government without any parliamentary scrutiny.
Wow. This is impressive. Quite a precedent. My question is, how is this being received? It's a great concept.
A great concept, but it basically, it has castrated Parliament. I mean, what's the point of having Parliament? Well, and of course, all the Conservatives who were in power have voted for it, and anyone who is not in power has voted against it. And it really is, again, something which is dividing the country.
How much is the reality of this endeavor? Does it have, as we say, legs? Will it actually occur?
Well, it's gone through the first parliamentary obstacle. It has two more to go through, two or three. Obviously, the House of Lords will probably throw it out, but then they can only delay legislation. They can't stop it. So it remains to be seen, but it's gotten over the first hurdle.
Is Theresa May, the Prime Minister, is she supporting this?
Oh, no, she's initiating it.
Oh, my goodness.
She's the one who's going to have the power to effectively rule by decree.
Well, this leads me.
Every law.
This leads me.
Every law that is coming over from the European Union, which is thousands.
I understand. This leads me to to a quick observation as we prepare to go to the break, Tom. This strikes me as you were very critical of the Prime Minister, saying that she seemed to be a little hesitant. And reticent about taking control. Strikes me that she's ready to take control. Is this being received?
No, I don't think I ever said she was hesitant or reticent. I said she had come over during the campaign as being weak and wobbly,
okay,
while claiming to be strong and stable.
But doesn't this not show her to be strong and stable?
No, it shows her to be a dictator.
Oh, all right. Tom Arms of Viewpoints Around the World. And, of course, lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Stay tuned for more here on the Talk Station FM 107 AM 1240. I want to find out what's happening now in Germany and France. By the way, he's got a note here, which we've seen as well. The shine comes off Macron. Of course, he is the president of France. Then we've got to get into Turkey buying Russian missiles. I read about that earlier today. This is an important story for us. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us this afternoon live from London. And Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us in light of the fact that it's, 11:30 p.m. your time, and I know it's been a busy day for you. Let's talk about some of the other issues, and I jumped ahead on something that I would like to touch back on, and this having to do with, we were talking about Brexit. The East European immigrants, we've talked about this in the past, and I think it had played a big role in the British decision to exit the European Union. At least that's my opinion. Feel free to just say yes or no to that. But what's happening?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. What's happening then with the Eastern European immigrants? Are they returning home? What's happening with you know, the events happening in Syria? Is this having a major positive impact on the European community?
Well, as far as East Europeans are concerned, between 1992 and 2015, the population of Eastern Europe dropped by 6%.
Okay.
That's people coming to the West, that is to Western Europe, because there were more jobs for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the moment, they're going back.
Why?
Because between 2004 and 2015, the GDP per person in Romania, Poland, Bulgaria, and Slovakia has more than doubled. And the growth rate now is going at about 4.5 to 5.5%. In the past year alone, salaries in Hungary are up 15%. Taxes are less, a lot less than they are in Western Europe, just 10% in Bulgaria.
Hmm.
And housing is between one-seventh and 50% less than what it is in Western Europe, depending on where you are. So Eastern Europe at the moment is booming, and people are moving back in big numbers.
What about the issue of the refugees, very quickly, of coming from Syria and the Middle East?
Well, certainly, in Eastern Europe, they don't want them.
Right.
You know, I think Hungary has accepted 25 refugees.
Mm. And of course, this...
they put up razor wire on the borders,
right,
and everything else. They have gone very, very far to the right when it comes to the issue of immigration.
Well, conservatives,
they want their own people back,
but
they don't want refugees, or they don't want anyone from any other part of the world.
I have to disagree with you on the description of right, unless you say correct. But they're very conservative about how they are populating their country. Very quickly, the events happening in Syria, and we haven't talked about this at length, and I don't want to belabor this, but are refugees returning back to their home countries, Iraq and Syria particularly?
They're starting to. It's just a trickle at the moment, especially those going back to Syria. And the reason is because the civil war between Assad and the rebels is still far from resolved.
Okay.
So ISIS is out of the picture, but there are still a lot of unresolved problems there.
All right, we're going to get back to that area of the country. Let's talk for a moment about Emmanuel Macron. And, apparently he's not – he's, as you say here, the shine has come off the French president. What's the situation?
Well, 2 months ago when he was elected president, he had a 65% approval rating. Now it's almost half that. It's 35%. Just took him 2 months. It was the fastest drop in modern French political history.
Well,
many things about him that he just hasn't gotten quite right. They didn't like the way he invited Trump for Bastille Day. They don't like the fact he wants to make his wife the First Lady of France. They don't like the fact that he's taken on what they call a Jupiterian role. He doesn't like to speak in public. They don't like his freeze on public sector pay or his budget cuts.
Wait, now, let's, let's talk about his pay cuts, because France is a predominantly socialist country, and he was going to remove some of the, well, the safety net in France. How is that being received?
Well, that they don't like. They don't the job schemes, exactly. Because job protection schemes, it's very difficult for the employers to fire people.
Right.
With the result that they don't hire them.
Right.
And so it has the highest unemployment rate among the developed countries in Europe. I think it's 10.5% or something like that. And he wants to get it down to 7.5%, which is still pretty high. And he wants to do that by relaxing the rules on the firing of employees. This is not going over very well with the trade unions, which is led by the CGT. And just yesterday, they had a huge strike. They called out all their members on strike. There were 4,000 separate strikes around the country and demonstrations by masked protesters in Paris.
All right. I want to move on to the issue of the European Union. Of course, Emmanuel Macron was being groomed as the next leader for the European Union of sorts, de facto leader. Of course, Chancellor Merkel still holds that position. And if she is in the midst of some major elections, we've been reading with interest, apparently her opponents are not gaining traction. So what impact does Emmanuel Macron's personal experience, political experience have on the German elections? And what about the German elections?
Well, first of all, Macron is having a big impact on Europe. He's called for a European finance minister, which Angela Merkel has sort of said, yeah, I'll go along with that. And so have various people in the European Commission. In the German elections, Merkel seems to be a shoo-in at the moment. You know, she just, the opposition SPD party is making no dent. Latest polls say SPD is 23.1%. And the Merkel's party is 37.4% in the polls. Big lead, you know, 14.3 lead.
So what does this
at this stage in the election, with only a couple of weeks to go before the election?
What does this do to the what does this do to the European Union in light of the fact that the UK is still planning now with the Henry the Eighth? What is that? The Henry the Eighth
clause.
What does this do to the what's the future of the European Union? And before we move on to Turkey,
well, a lot of people in the European Union are saying, let's take the opportunity of Brexit to integrate politically and economically even more, because the British were a break on political and economic integration, and so some people are saying all members of the European Union now should become members of the Eurozone. Not all of them are. So everyone should be using the euro as their currency. They should also be talking more about greater defense cooperation, things like that. It's interesting to note that one of the differences between the SPD party, which is the main opposition, and Merkel's CDU-CSU coalition is, in fact, that Merkel wants to increase defense spending to 2%.
Right.
And have greater European defense integration. They want to she wants to reach that NATO target, with SPD doesn't.
As we go to this break, just very quickly, has the opinion about President Trump changed any in Europe by any chance?
No, this.
No. Okay. Well, I just was curious. We'll get back to you, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're talking with him about viewpoints around the world. Up next, Turkey buying Russian missiles. What's the future of the relationship between Turkey and the European Union, an organization it wants to join, Turkey and NATO, and now its relationship with Russia? Who's keeping score? We'll find out from Tom Arms here in just a moment.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Tejo is the Colombian version of horseshoe. It is also a reflection of the national psyche. The target is packed with gunpowder. When it is hit, it explodes with a loud and violent bang. The game was adapted by the Spanish from a gentler pre-Columbian version. Their conquest was cruel, violent, and involved large quantities of gunpowder. Colombia has followed that route ever since. It is now trying to change. It would be difficult. It is not impossible. Its history has been one civil war after another. In 1948, the murder of reforming presidential candidate Jorge Eliseo Gaitan sparked off the 10-year La Violencia. The civil war that cost 200,000 lives also spawned the guerrilla organization FARC. Its end in 1958 failed to address the country's underlying social problems, making it ripe for a Castro-inspired guerrilla movement. FARC needed money, so it developed the cocaine business and dabbled in extortion and kidnapping. An estimated 250,000 people died between 1958 and 2016. 5 million were made homeless. In 2002, Alvaro Uribe was elected president on a tough anti-FARC ticket. Uribe made good on his campaign pledges. President Manuel Santos won the Nobel Peace Prize, but inside Colombia, Uribe is credited with driving the guerrillas to the negotiating table. He is the most respected and popular politician in Colombia, which is why the country remains divided on the peace deal. Uribe opposes it. A key part of the peace agreement is an amnesty for most of the FARC guerrillas. This is unacceptable to Uribe, and he is determined to use next May's presidential elections as a second referendum on the peace deal. There are other problems. Prominent among them is geography. Colombia's topography ranges from towering peaks to dense rainforest and impassable swamps. Almost everyone travels by plane. Colombia has fewer railways than Ghana, and outside the urban areas, the roads are winding potholed efforts that leave the internal organs battered and bruised. The result is a boon for the bad guys and a massive break on economic development. The drug lords and guerrillas are able to melt into the jungles, where they're almost impossible to locate. If they are found, it's difficult to move enough security forces fast enough to effectively combat their operation. The government has a $30 billion-plus program to overcome geographic obstacles. It plans port developments, 12,500 kilometers of roads, 1,600 kilometers of railways, 5,000 kilometers of maritime projects, and 31 airport extensions. Then there are the oligarchy. A dozen or so families own more than half the land and are unlikely to happily relinquish their control. Land reform is a key element in the deal with FARC. It was the oligarch's decision to push the peasants off the land in the name of efficiency that encouraged the establishment and growth of FARC. Corruption and the drug trade continue to plague. Cocoa production is at record levels. A new generation of drug lords have filled the shoes of FARC and the late unlamented Pablo Escobar. They ensure their operations by distributing funds to politicians. Then there are the ELN guerrillas, still out there in the jungle. They are less than a quarter of the size of FARC, but could become the nucleus for a revived guerrilla war if the government fails to deliver on its part of the peace agreement. To combat both the drug lords and the ELN, the government has increased defense spending to $10.8 billion and sent another 80,000 troops into the jungles. Colombia has the potential to succeed. It is rich in emeralds, gold, and oil and gas. Its climate allows two harvests a year. Foreign investment is pouring into the country in the wake of the peace deal. If Colombia can succeed, then its example will become a beacon of hope for failed states around the world. But if the government puts a step wrong, the country could explode like a game of Tejo.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with our guest, Tom Arms of Look Ahead Radio and lookaheadnews.com. Tom, I don't know if you heard that news release report just a few moments ago, but Ben Shapiro, a conservative, will be speaking at the University of California at Berkeley. And students are complaining, saying they should be protected from opinions that they don't agree with. I just wonder How are the European youth responding to, diverse opinions, Tom?
I think they're still open.
Are they
heard of any students refusing to allow a platform to people who have different views? I think that bit is an American student phenomenon at the moment.
That's scary.
I think it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous? Yes. All right. Let's move on to really important things.
I mean, if you don't want to hear them, don't
listen.
Go to the top.
No. Well, hey.
Change the channel.
Tom.
Switch
off. That's common sense. Don't even go there. Which is lacking, unfortunately, in the United States, I do believe. Okay. Turkey is buying Russian missiles. Turkey would like to be a member of the European Union and has been positioning itself to do just that. It is a member of NATO. I'm a little confused here. Can you straighten me out?
Well, it's having big arguments with the two key players in Europe and NATO. It doesn't like U.S. policy towards the Kurds. It's very angry about that. It's very angry that the Trump administration will not deport Mr. Gulen, who they accuse of being behind the coup, and there's no real evidence of it. They have called Germany, the leading country in the EU, an enemy of Turkey. And they have been sidling up to both China and Russia over the last few months. Now, Turkey, the second largest army in Europe,
right,
or in NATO, a buffer between the Middle East, Russia, and Western Europe, very strategically placed, that bridge between Europe and Asia. Number of very important NATO bases in Turkey. It is absolutely vital that the NATO forces use weapons that are able to integrate with weapons in other NATO countries. They start buying weapons from Russia or China, and there's any conflict, then they can't talk to each other. They can't work together.
The other aspect of this is it gives NATO, if they should require it, access to some of the technology that's going to be sold to Turkey, which, of course, I say tongue-in-cheek because I doubt the Turks would accommodate that. Quick note before we move on to other items, and we've got a caller standing by. This issue of Turkey and Russia, what is this portend for Turkey joining the European Union? And obviously, we're talking military, but Turkey is, well, somewhat reliant on the European economy, if I'm not mistaken. So, because it is stable, as stable as it can be, what does this portend for the Turkey's involvement in the European Union? Does this pretty much eliminate it?
They've been moving away.
Okay.
They have been trying to position themselves, move away
okay.
from membership of the European Union. At least Erdogan has.
Okay.
He's been saying, we don't need to be members anymore.
All right.
You know, but they are part of the customs union.
Okay.
And they do have a free trade agreement.
Right.
So, you know, his argument is we've got everything we need. We don't actually need to be members of the European Union.
Well,
and we certainly don't want to be in any club which includes Germany, because Germany is now our enemy.
Interesting. All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, LookAhead Radio. Gary in Oriental joins us. Gary, we've got about a minute and a half. Go for it, sir.
I'll make it quick. Well, Tom, actually, this is the second time I've actually agreed with you.
Okay.
When you were talking about the Berkeley students, if you don't like it, change the channel, basically. I paraphrase that. Hope you can go along with that. So, Tom, I came up with a great idea, and maybe Britain, everybody else will go along with this, and we can get some sort of a EU or a NATO deal. Those that don't like free speech in the United States, we'll just send you to Korea. They don't like it either. What do you think about that?
North Korea.
Yes.
North Korea. Exactly. Yes. Not South Korea. South Korea is cool. They make good stuff. What do you think of that, Tom? Do you think maybe we can all pull together as a world and say, okay, you little whiny crybabies, you all go to North Korea. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'll go along with that. I mean, I'm all in favor of free speech. I made my living out of free speech.
Okay, let me.
I was having a discussion with someone the other day, and I said, however, you have to draw the line between free speech and incitement to violence.
Absolutely. Tom, here's the thing. Look, you know, I don't dislike you. I don't like you. I'm neutral. You're just like another guy, and you have a different viewpoint.
I like you.
But I still listen to what you have to say. And that's the way the world works. And these guys just don't have a grasp. And just blows my socks off, I swear to God.
All right. Gary, thanks very much for the call. I mean, bring a little humor to the equation. Thanks very much for your time. Appreciate that. Tom, I want to move on to, you bring up Korea very quickly. I meant to ask that in our list. Is the European community paying close attention to what's happening in North Korea with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
are they concerned?
Paying close attention. And in fact, Theresa May, while I was in Colombia, actually said, you know, we're backing any sanctions.
Okay.
And the rest of Europe, the Germans as well, they said, we will back any sanctions against North Korea.
Okay.
They're 100% behind sanctions.
All right.
They are not 100% behind the military option.
Okay. Let's wrap it up with changing structure of Dutch families. We've got a minute to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is very interesting. They're trying to push it through Parliament at the moment, whereby you can have three-parent families. That is, three parents have legal responsibility for a child. And the reason is because you have all these gay couples who are using surrogate mothers, and the surrogate mothers want to have a legal responsibility for the child. So the child ends up having three parents.
Dividing the baby three ways, I can see that. I mean,
yeah, real Solomon-like.
Very Solomon-like. I'm trying to figure that one out.
It's on the Old Testament, isn't it?
Yes, it is. All right.
I wonder which part each parent gets.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Viewpoints around the world this evening, live from London, England. Tom, thank you very much for being with us this evening. This is an amazing. The world has changed radically in the 3 weeks that you've been gone. Maybe with your return, things will settle down. Well, Ross doesn't think so either. Stay with us here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.